Although we don't make a habit of it,
Badger.
During this series of podcasts, we do occasionally let slip the odd F-word.
Frangipan!
A blasphemous reference here and there.
Wee donkey.
And there's even a mention of the horses in Pride and Prejudice.
Pizzle!
If you're listening with children in earshot...
Bumface!
I wouldn't worry. It's nothing they haven't already heard on TikTok.
Do you know what? I was having this discussion a bit back with a wife about words that you read in books that you never have to say out loud, and then at some point you suddenly end up having to say them out loud.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you say it totally wrong.
Completely wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chagrin.
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 Yeah. Much to his chagrin. What do you mean it's chagrin?
That's a type of pate, isn't it?
Sorry, what did you say? Chagrin. Yeah. Hyperbole.
Hyperbole, yeah.
Yeah. Had that one.
That's a good one. Some words, of course, you can say in different ways, and people swear that you can't, and then you look it up and you go, oh, yeah, it's actually all right to say it.
You mean like Shrewsbury and Shrewsbury?
Exactly.
There was a bloke, you know Chris Tiffany, who used to work with me at Galaxy?
Yeah.
We used to have Shrewsbury cookies in the vending machine at work, and I remember one day I went and got one, and I was sat there eating this cookie, and Chris was sort of looking at me, as he always did when I was eating, And he just went, what's that? And I said, that's a Shrewsbury cookie. And he went, has it got real Shrewsbury's in it?
What did you say? No, they're called Shrewsbury's, you idiot.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Get it right. Right. Should we start the podcast?
Yeah, because I think we're lacking direction right now.
Welcome to the Failing Writers Podcast. We're three blokes who all love writing, but probably don't get around to doing it as much as we should. So we thought talking about it in a podcast might help us, and others, actually find the inspiration to get some words on paper. This week, we talk about what we're writing, whether you can learn to be a great writer, about the time we met a Hollywood movie producer, and erotica, obviously. Well, let's start with you, Tom, because you've actually said that you've written something this week.
I have. I've been beavering away, like properly, like enjoying it as well. Like,
whoa.
Like, maybe I'll just squeeze another half hour, actually. Oh, I'll just go and have a little tinker.
Wow.
It's been quite exciting, really.
What are you writing?
The novel after the hiatus of, I was looking at the file, you know, where it saves and it tells you when you last looked at the file and last saved it. 2014.
Probably the last edit, isn't it? Because you said, is this the one you said you had 2.5 chapters done?
Yeah.
So how many have you got now?
Slightly more. I've done about 2,500 words.
Bloody
in the last,
hell.
In the last couple of days.
That's good going, that, Tom. So like 2,500 words
every
7 years.
Yeah, I mean, it depends which period you have. I'm going to average it over the last week. Average it over the last 7 years. Having said that, John, you say that as a little joke, but it's true, isn't it? If I'd just written 2 words every day, but it shows that if you do a little bit every day, rather than, we said last podcast about, you know, oh, I have to have my 2 hours and I've got to build up to it and it's no point if I can't get, well, actually, yeah, doing a little bit is fine.
Yeah.
You'll have sessions that are longer, but it's fine just having a little nibble at it. It gets it done. It keeps it moving.
Yeah, just the odd word here and there.
But yeah, no, it's been great because there's an actual story coming out of it and things happening that I wasn't expecting.
Wow. Did you get chagrin in there anywhere?
I'm going to get chagrin.
No. Well, there's 2,501 words then, straight away.
So no, exciting times.
Good. What is the book about, Tom? Tell us.
It's a...
Have you not figured that out yet?
Nearly murder mystery.
A nearly murder mystery?
So what's a nearly murder mystery?
The guy doesn't get murdered, so I guess that's what makes it less of a
never
murder
quite
mystery,
gets round to
there
it.
There isn't actually a murder in it.
Well, no one's ever going to solve that mystery, are they?
Well,
because
or are
who
they?
Killed him? Well, actually, nobody did, but nobody knows that.
Yeah, so it's a murder mystery, but possibly doesn't have a murder in it.
So did you think, what do all murder mysteries have? How can I make it different?
Yeah, well, I want to put my own twist on things.
Have a murder on. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just drop the murder. Just make it a mystery.
Well, no, I think it's quite a cool story, I think. So, yeah. So I'm trying to do it. I'm trying to keep it...
light.
Yeah, it's not... It's a little bit me. Do you mean it's got a few little quirky, funny, nice bits in it. But, yeah. It's the first time I've felt I don't know if it's because maybe it's the right time for me to do it, because I always felt weak in the character side of things, writing.
Yeah.
I never quite knew how to get the characters across.
What's changed?
Just my writing style a little bit, maybe.
I guess we never really had time to explore character in 30-second radio adverts.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was really... writing radio ads was really good for dialogue.
But not a lot. Yeah, not a lot else, actually.
But character development was negligible,
yeah,
wasn't it?
It's very difficult to get a three-act arc into 30 seconds.
You just base
seconds.
It on stereotypes,
yeah.
Don't you?
Yeah.
You could argue. You could argue as well that character is sort of everything, isn't it? I mean, the plot's not sort of like a nice to have, but if you get the characters right, you can sort of tell any story and people will enjoy it.
Yeah, that's sort of become the fashion, hasn't it? Or the sort of perceived wisdom. I'm not entirely sure that's true, though. I don't sort of see it that way. For me, it's always been about sort of story. You've got to have the characters got to be right to tell the story, but
that would explain your paper-thin 2D characters.
That's true,
wouldn't it?
But the characters make the story, don't they? That's sort of the I suppose that's the thinking behind it.
That
the characters will create a story if they're good, because that's what people do. That's what humans do.
It's tricky though, isn't it? Because like you, Tom, you wouldn't have sat down and started thinking about this man and building up his life story and then decide that he was going to fake his own death.
No, the twist in the story was the starting
point.
Yeah,
exactly.
What if this happened? Right, well, who would it happen to and how would it happen? Yeah.
Maybe
it's both. Maybe, hold on a minute, maybe stories need a story and characters be in the story.
Wow. I am learning something with every podcast.
But I think my problem with characters before, I was thinking the other day when I was writing, and I know exactly what it was, is that I was reluctant / scared to be too explicit about showing what kind of character, because I always think that's really weak in books where it's the, I don't know, the alcoholic detective. Mm. It's just so like...
What cliches are we talking about?
Yeah, and it's just so... just doesn't leave you to work out anything about that character. You should show the character from the actions that they undertake.
Yeah.
Not from the narrator of the story going...
He was like this.
She was formidable and often got angry at the drop of a hat and
definitely
didn't like Wednesdays. But it was Wednesday. You've got to show these things. But then I was also scared that my writing wouldn't be good enough. These little subtle things I was putting in to show the character wouldn't be enough.
Yeah.
But I think, hopefully, I've found some kind of balance in terms of...
Yeah, that's what you want. Exactly.
That is an important thing. I do that quite a lot, where you think of something and you go, right, there we go, I think I've got that across. And then you start to worry, but is that clear enough? Is the reader or the listener or whatever, will they get that? And then you're in danger of, like, just, you know, mad exposition and really hammering a point too much.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, when you sort of you tell a joke and then you worry that someone didn't get the joke, so you start to explain it and thereby
and
completely
destroy
ruin it.
Yeah,
I'll just completely overload the front end of the joke with set up an explanation and kind of like, yeah.
Yeah, it does involve a lot of trust, doesn't it, writing? Because you do have to hand it over and just go, how do you interpret that? And that's the fun bit of reading, actually, isn't it?
Well, we all know from our English classes as kids that can go on a funny journey, can't it?
Yeah.
So what do you think he meant by the door? The door? That was literally just what the guy walked through. Was there's a meaning behind it? The door has a meaning of its own.
Wait a minute. That's how he just got from one room to the next. Yeah. My English teacher, Miss Seath, we did Pride and Prejudice at school. And it's about, I don't know, it's not even an inch thick, that book. Her copy was about 6 inches thick because every page had like 3 or 4 post-it notes on it. And she could find a hidden meaning in every single word of the book. Her theories about what horses meant were just mad.
Probably not suitable for school children.
Mm-hmm. Well, exactly. You felt a bit wrong saying to her, but in that time, horses were the main mode of transport. Like, the reason he rode a horse wasn't because he was a virulent character.
If he'd have picked zebras, you might have a point.
If he walked, the book would have been over by the time he fucking got there. but yeah, you do. Yeah, you have to trust your reader or listener or whatever, don't it, to figure it out. Otherwise, you could be explaining stuff forever.
You do, but you find yourself second-guessing what you've written as well and start analysing it like a GCSE English student, don't you?
Yeah.
You think, why has she got brown hair? Like, what am I saying?
But you must put a lot
Nothing.
Of...
Nothing. I just randomly picked it because I can.
But you must put a lot of subconscious stuff in your writing. I think that's probably true. I'm sure there's a lot more meaning
that
is, in there.
I think that's why it's sometimes why it's scary sharing your writing.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Because it is a little window into your hidden bit of you, isn't
it? When it pop out.
I always think that about, and I'm sure you guys do the same. But I always think that about writing erotic fiction.
Yeah. Sometimes you worry that people will get the wrong impression.
Yeah, are you trying to tell us something, Tom? What have you? Do you have a nom de plume?
No.
You've been writing erotic fiction for years.
But I just think if you'd be, I don't know, you're just letting all your trade secrets out, aren't you?
It's true.
Willy-nilly, if you'll pardon the expression.
Yeah.
And you could be writing some erotic fiction
and then worry that some of your sort of more literary sensibilities would accidentally come out as you were writing it.
I'd be worried that all sorts of things will come out while I'm writing it.
Popping out left, right and centre.
No, but if you're there writing your erotic fiction and, you know, as the two lovers laid together.
Hang on, Tommy.
Naked on the
steady
grass,
on
their flesh gently touching. And then actually someone goes, oh, no, it's meant to last more than 80 seconds.
You want another page?
Oh, no, of course. I mean, this is just the character. This is a deeper meaning. It's like the horses in Pride and Prejudice. Yeah, you get it. Yeah. Oh, shit. That should be our task for next week.
To get to a second page
a bit
of
erotic fiction.
I did actually have an idea for using erotic fiction as an opener for a book. I'm always big on the openers for books. I don't know if it comes to the advertising part of me, of wanting to hook people in.
Yeah.
You should, shouldn't you, in the first page of a book? It should be a, whoa, what's happening here?
There's no point writing a really awful page and then doing, you know, 302 really good ones.
No, don't put that at the front. You put the awful pages in the middle of the book,
exactly,
don't you?
Exactly, yeah.
Not at the front.
I'll just get it out of the way.
But no, the idea that it was the character, the main character was struggling with life and was trying to find a way out of whatever. So he's trying all these different jobs and stuff, and then he suddenly decided to try writing erotic fiction. So the first page was just a page of absolutely awful erotic fiction.
Well, that your character wrote.
But you don't know that as you're reading it. You just think it might be the book.
Yeah, you don't. Yeah, it's your character's writing. So at the end, he's scrumpling up, throwing it in a bin, and the story starts to open up that this is yet another
that's a good opening,
job
Tom.
That he's not been able to do. It is. It just needs, again, Dave, story of my writing life. Hey, that's a good idea. I should write that. Right, I've done that bit now. That's the exciting bit done. What else should I do? Something else.
It's funny that we're talking about this because I genuinely, for a very brief period, thought maybe that would be quite a good way into writing fiction because I was thinking, how hard could it be? And I looked at, I don't know, what's the website where you can basically audition for to be the voice of certain books. I mean, not very well-known books.
Oh.
What's it called? It's like an Amazon spin-off, isn't it?
ATX. Is it ATX?
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah.
It's something like that, anyway. And I thought, yeah, I'll just have a little look at that and just see if anyone needs their book. You know, this is when I was particularly quiet.
Yes.
And I looked, and I thought, I'll check what the bestsellers are. Because obviously you don't want to, you know, you don't want a book deal where you're reading something that no one's ever going to listen to, obviously.
Like our stuff.
Welcome to the Failing Writers Podcast.
Yeah.
And every single bestseller was just like filthy fiction.
Wow.
And I thought,
people
that's interesting.
Like smut, don't they?
There's obviously a lot of people going for this. Maybe that's a way in. It's like you could write some mucky fiction on the side and then have a, you know, write the stuff you actually wanted to write. But it'd probably help, you know, hone your writing as well. So for a while I was like, maybe I just
well,
go
yeah,
for it.
It's an established
50
path,
Shades
isn't
of Grey,
it?
Wasn't it? I mean, that was the How to Make a Million from
exactly.
Now, wasn't it?
Well, that probably started off as a boardroom story, didn't it? About a powerful CEO, and then it just, you know,
took a turn.
Well, when,
I don't actually
yeah, it took
know.
A turn for handcuffs and things.
You watched the film, didn't
no,
you?
No, I'm just guessing. But that's an established path, isn't it? I'm sure there are lots of people who wanted to be proper actors who thought, I'll just do a bit of porn.
just to get in there. Get my foot in the door.
Character work. yes. I can work on me, you know, me technique.
And the same, that's exactly the same problem though, isn't it? You're doing your business and then people are going, oh, is that how you're doing it?
I never thought of putting that there.
Everyone's a critic. Yeah. Same with the erotic fiction. But do you know what the brilliant thing about 50 Shades of Grey was? Was that it was pretty poorly written. Without wishing to be too judgmental of someone that's obviously been very successful. But people were reading it regardless. The buzz around it had got so big and so going through all the social media and everything, the people were reading it, getting two chapters in going, God, this is hard. This is terrible.
And buying the other ones.
And then still reading it. And buying, and still buying
presumably
stuff.
Presumably there must have been something about
and
it.
And other people would still go out and buy it and go, oh, yeah, everyone says it's rubbish. Better get a copy.
Was it sort of the first sort of really kind of sort of highly erotic book that went proper mainstream?
I think that might have been Lady Chatterley's Lover in 1960-something, Dave.
Well, yeah, I suppose so. I suppose so, yeah. But, you know, it sort of made
it... probably some dodgy Egyptian hieroglyphics showing a thing. It's as old as the hills, isn't it?
Well,
humans
yes,
have been having sex but, you know, for literally centuries, David.
right. Well, I guess so, yeah. But so is there going to be any sex in your book, Tom?
Yes, I think there might be, actually.
Is it something that happens, I've been led to believe.
How explicit are you going to go, Tom?
I think I'm going to breeze over it a little bit, to be honest. Yeah, because I always hate it in film. You know when you're watching a really good film that's got like a proper story, and I always assume it's not the actual writer of the story, but it's someone at the studio going, you know what we should have here? Let's put a love interest in. And you're like, oh my God. And it just like pulls the handbrake on the story. And you're like, I don't care whether you're going to get off with her. There's people behind you that are waiting to shoot you. This is not the time for this conversation. Yeah. Just seriously.
Literally, no.
Do you mean they're stood there at an arms deal and there's people waiting to shoot them and they're still going to have a little kiss? I think even like my wife, if we're just going out for a meal and the car park's a bit busy and I try and leave, come on. Car park's busy. Let's get out of here.
Yeah.
They're waiting. No, that guy's
no,
waiting for a space
on
behind
its way.
Us.
Come on.
Fine. Put my pants back on.
Not in the NCP, Tom. Come on.
No, I'd hate that in films where it's just like it just seems so unnecessary.
They always get their pants on really quickly, don't they, after a sex scene. Like, there'll be this wild sex scene and then there's a knock at the door and when they get up out of bed, they're like pretty much fully dressed again straight away.
You see, Dave, that's me completely. I'm in there, do the business, and then I'm fully dressed like seconds afterwards.
Yeah.
So I'd write that into a scene thinking that's normal, and then you'd come along.
No, what everybody does.
And I'd be like, oh.
Aren't you always quite grateful, though, that they dress so quickly when you're watching a film with your kids?
Well, I don't know. I don't remember there being a sex scene in The Gruffalo, to be honest, but...
That's because you've not read the subtext
yeah,
properly.
Maybe that could be it, yeah. Well, that's good, Tom, that you've written something.
It's excellent, Dave.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
I'm feeling a burning passion inside me.
Yeah, we'll get it on the page.
So, are you going to get back to it today?
No, I'll probably leave it a few weeks. No, I will, yeah. I'll probably have a little tinker, I think.
Yeah,
I feel like I feel like this podcast has done some good work.
Have you been
work.
Inspired, Tom?
I think I have. I think I have. And I feel like I've actually got a story to tell now. It's kind of, there was a few bits that didn't really work that I'd kind of hit a bit of a brick wall with 7 years ago. Yeah, I feel like a bit more in control of actually just thinking, well, you know, I can just change that. And I'm coming to terms with and having my peace with letting stuff slide in the story rather than having it all completely watertight first draft.
We said this last week, didn't we? Just get to the end and, you know.
Yeah, I've fallen down with that before, definitely. And actually, that's for later.
Yeah.
That's for sorting out later.
It is. And maybe not even later. I mean, there are some really great books where they're just like gaping plot holes. There's quite a few Shakespeare plays even where just things just totally don't make sense. They somehow don't, it doesn't really matter. If it's good.
Do you know what I always notice in books? And I think people, you know, as a, when you're writing something and you leave stuff for later, as in you put it into the story, thinking, yeah, I might reference that later, or that'll be important in this bit later on. So it's quite a specific action or something that happens to your character.
Yeah.
And then you forget about it. But it stays in there, because there's nothing wrong with it intrinsically. Like, it's fine. It's just kind of...
It doesn't end up having the important...
has no relevance whatsoever. And I think sometimes in stories you can kind of see that.
Yeah. Couldn't be asked to go back to it.
A thing that happens that then has no relevance. Aye. Yeah, there's no... You forget to come back to it.
Well, you just get caught up in the... Like you have, Tom, get caught up in the moment and start going down a different thread and then, you know, you forget about
it. But how amazing is it when you actually get on that where the story starts writing itself?
Yeah.
Where do you mean where you feel like you're reporting what's happening rather than creating what's happening?
Yeah.
And you can even have a really tight, like, crisp plot that you want to follow, that you've really thought about, and you still go off on a tangent.
Yeah.
Because you think this is better somehow. The character wouldn't do that. Yeah, exactly, they do this, yeah. Therefore I'm going to take it this direction.
Yeah. That's when you've got your characters right, isn't it? See, that's what I said. I struggled with that before, about trying to force them into doing stuff or square pegs in round holes.
Yeah. Follow their own path.
Which brings us back to the erotica. No, it doesn't.
I think I saw that one.
Has everyone else not got a square peg? Oh, God.
Well, maybe that's next week's task, is to do that, to write a little bit of erotic fiction. And
Or maybe it should be bad erotica.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it can be. Is there good erotica?
To cover ourselves off. Because then you can just, you can always go, well, it's meant to be bad, isn't it?
I think that's the point. It's got to be bad, isn't it?
Well, I think that's where my initial thought came from that idea of having the bad erotica. I think a page of bad erotica at the start of a novel would be hilarious.
Let's all try and write that opening. Let's all try and write the opening to Tom's next book.
Yeah.
Let's do it. We all need a pen name as well, because I noticed that when I was looking through that website that all the names are like... Kitty DeVere, exactly. You need some kind of...
They all got initials.
Special name. They're clearly like all middle-aged men writing these stories, but...
I'm going to be Charlton Longstaff.
You're listening to the Failing Dieters Pod... What? Writers. Ah, right, yeah, cool. Oh, I didn't realise. Do you want some crisps?
You've got to have an initial, though. That's quite a big thing, isn't it, in your writer's name?
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Isn't that for more serious writers, though?
Apparently, it's quite a big sort of power move in sort of Hollywood circles.
Well, you mean like C.S. Lewis?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. W. Shakespeare. You got to get, L. Ron Hubbard. Just putting a sort of letter.
Oh, is he not called L. Ron?
No. It's just Ron.
This is confusing, isn't it?
But apparently putting there's a theory that putting the right letter in your writer's name can have a massive impact on whether you're seen as being sort of successful and serious, or just forgotten about, like M. Night Shyamalan.
And what's the correct letter?
I don't know. That's the problem. If I knew it, I wouldn't be on this podcast, would I? I'd be sipping champagne somewhere.
But it can't be the letter of your name.
Yeah. It's got to be a letter that doesn't appear in your real name.
Do you have a middle name, Tommy?
Yes, Edward. What? So this is where we get confusing, because I'd be Tom E. Turner. So I'd be Tommy Turner.
Tommy Turner.
So like Elrond, people would get confused and think I'm called Tommy.
Could be T. Edward Turner.
Yeah. See? I'm just ever grateful that my parents didn't think to give me the middle name of Ian, I guess, would be my starting point. Because that would spell tit.
Oh, okay. I was thinking Tommyan. Tommyan.
Okay. Welcome. Thanks for
subscribing to me.
Thanks for coming.
But what about you, John? Have you been using your...
Got any initials?
I think J.C. Rand is quite good, actually. I think I'm going to change that immediately.
Rand. That is pretty good. See what I mean?
Dave,
see,
right. Bloody
that
hell,
sounds
that
like a powerful
yes.
writer that should be taken seriously. Whereas John just sounds like a,
who's
an idiot. Who would listen to John?
Dave, what's your initial name?
My middle name's John.
Oh, we can't do that.
DJ, can't
you can't be DJ Baird. Yeah. People get confused.
D John Baird, he's the mustard.
Nice.
Have you written anything, John, in your 2-hour window?
Yes, I have.
Have you been using your slots?
I have been using my slots.
Good.
I think I told you I was working on a short story.
Yep.
Katie sort of commissioned me.
Oh,
she said you need to write.
Is this are we still talking about erotica?
Yeah, that's right. Well,
she just said, think of something new, really. John.
She did, yeah. Think of something really brilliant and clever and new, and write that. Oh, okay. No, she said write some love stories, is what she said.
Ooh.
And I was like, really? And she said, yeah, well, you've got 3 already, and you could put out a little book for Valentine's Day.
An anthology.
A little book of love stories. She said, it's the kind of thing that might, you never know. I thought, I'll. But sometimes it's nice to have like a restriction on what you write. Do you know what I mean? Like not just a direction, but you have to focus on one particular thing.
Yeah.
It can be.
Yeah, no, yeah. There's a lot of truth in that.
Having a brief.
You know, if you're just given carte blanche or carte blanche, as Tommy would say, then...
Carte blanche. I read it in a book.
Then it's actually really difficult, isn't it? It's like people who write, you know, like lipograms and things. You know, when you're writing with a within a constraint, like there's that novel...
Just for our listeners that might not know what that is, what is the lipogram?
A lipogram is when you miss something out. You can't write something, I think. So there's a novel, Gadsby, which was... I can't remember who wrote it.
Oh, like where they don't use the letter E?
Exactly. Oh, it's entirely written without the letter E.
Yeah,
and you have to sort of perform these linguistic gymnastics to describe something sometimes.
Yeah. Yes.
But I've done that with a lot of my writing where I don't include a story because a lot of writing does have a story.
Yeah.
And it's very hard.
Most
very hard
of mine just doesn't have a point.
Without a story.
You've no idea when you've finished.
Is this the beginning, the middle, or the end?
But no, about the writing thing, because I've done some, given some training when I was working in radio on writing. The bit about writer's block in there, I claim there's no such thing as writer's block. It doesn't exist.
Right.
All it is not knowing your brief, not knowing what you're meant to be writing.
Because we're all used to working from a brief, weren't we, in the olden days?
Because if you know what you're meant to be writing, you can write.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what you've just said, John.
And you have tricky bits where you slow down and you don't do very much for a bit. But yeah, you're right. It's not a block.
No, it's not.
It's just a problem to work out.
No, what it is, you don't know what problem you're trying to work out with your writing.
Yeah.
Mm.
As soon as you've got something to explain, you've got something to write. But that's exactly what you're saying there with having a little brief, a little direction of it needs to be this.
Yeah.
It gives you that little bit of framework, doesn't it, just to start building stuff around.
Yeah.
Rather than staring at the screen going, what's your right?
Also, love stories are really hard. So it's quite a good challenge.
Well, yeah.
And totally out of my comfort zone, I think. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Maybe you should just write in your comfort
zone. Well, how's it going so far? Have you started? Did you
Yeah, I've nearly finished this one. I've been working on it for like 2 months maybe, but it's become longer than a short story really, because normally you'd want to wrap it up around 3,000 words or something, but I've already got to about 6,500 words.
Well, might as well keep going now then, don't you?
And where does your natural lean take you on a love story then? Is it all sunshines and rainbows, or is it bittersweet and melancholic, or is it...
Well, you know me, I'm a bit
bittersweet and melancholic.
Yeah. Yeah, I tend to go down the darker route. Well, no, actually, that's not true. All over, to be honest. The other ones I've written, they're all really different, and that's also
it's good,
quite
good thing to have, isn't it?
It's interesting.
In a collection of stories, for them to be different. Is
I think so.
Important, isn't it?
But I like writing in different styles as well. I find that really interesting.
Mm.
You know, and I think, like, you know, a lot of people say you should write about your own life, which I sort of agree in. I agree with, to a certain extent, like you should write about the things that interest you.
Yeah. But don't write about your actual life.
I would never write about my own life. I would never write about...
How boring would that be?
I know, that's what I mean. I'd never write about being a middle-aged bloke who does voiceovers and, you know, lives in Yorkshire. I mean...
Yeah.
I couldn't be arsed.
I hear that.
Like, the whole point of writing is that you get to, like, live through other people.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit of vicarious escapism, isn't it?
That's the
whole thing.
Yeah. I can't imagine writing your own memoirs. I can't imagine anything more dull, to be honest.
Well, there's a thing.
But interestingly, saying you write about what you know, in the novel that I've just started writing on again, initially I'd set it in the States because it just seemed sexier and more fun. And then as soon as I was actually doing some proper writing on it this week, that just got really hard.
Mm. Yeah.
Just for the little bits of indications and stuff of, or
right.
There's a bit where just this woman's driving down the street and it says passing such and such as, you know, shops. Oh. And you think, oh my God, what kind of shops would they have?
I don't want to research it. I just want to write.
Yeah, exactly. I know, but that's such a waste of time, isn't it? For just the sake of nothing.
Isn't that great though? That is a very cool thing though, isn't it? The fact that you can, like, I don't know, however long, 15 years ago, to do all that research. What a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
But now you literally, if you want to visit a street in Seattle or something, then you can just go there, walk down the street and have a look
at
the shop windows, and it is mentally brilliant.
Yeah. That is one thing though that I shy away from doing in writing, because I know it is quite an important part of a lot of people's writing process is to research things. But I'm just a bit too lazy for that. Instead of actually researching stuff, I'll try and find a way around it to not, I'll not mention that, you know. Yeah. Like exactly that point of, oh, what shops would there be? Like in writing something that took, like that book that I was doing about, okay, sort of, so what was going on in 1989? Instead of thinking about it, I try not to mention anything that specific. maybe I should be a bit more conscientious.
I think you, well, no, but you're right. You were alive in 1989.
I was alive.
So you are writing about what you know, yeah, as well. Do you mean there's kind of a...
I wasn't, you know, I was nine. So that's, yeah.
Quite little, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's good, John. That's quite exciting. So is it going to be like a big collection, big sort of co-op anthology of love stories?
It's probably not going to be that big, is it? Well, I just keep going. Let's see.
Yeah.
I'm doing it, in, you know, as part of other things that I like, that I've started writing. I've got a book that I've started as well.
Ooh.
That's a bit longer. It's a novel. And it's like a sort of comedy sci-fi.
Wow.
Oh.
Which is very unlike the sort of stuff. I actually decided that I should probably try to write something that people might want to read. That was the that was the brief for that one.
Yeah.
Rather than like a philosophical novel about free will or something. So, yeah.
You're listening to the Failing Writers Podcast, a podcast about failing to be a writer.
It's funny, isn't it? Because it is important to like have that sort of have a brief, have an idea of what you're wanting to do. But I was thinking about this the other day about when I left Galaxy and became a voiceover with the idea of sort of dedicating myself to writing. I did a load of like writing workshops and seminars and training sessions and that sort of thing with a Screen Yorkshire. And there were like some BBC writers room things that I went on. And on the one hand, it was really, really good to sort of learn new skills. And it was a lot of talk about story structure and character arcs and character development, all this sort of thing. And also from the BBC point of view of looking, okay, what are we looking for? What sort of programmes are we commissioning at the moment and all that sort of thing? And it was great in one sense. But in another sense, I found it quite prohibitive because... Whereas before, I would just sit down and just start writing stuff and just see what came out. And I would just write. When I was a teenager, I'd write for hours and hours and hours. And most of it was garbage, but there'd be some good stuff in there. Mm. Then I learned all this stuff about writing. And I became so focused on, like, thinking about what I was going to write and what the audience would be and how I would frame it and how I would structure it. I ended up not writing anything at all. for literally years, I didn't write a word. Because I spent so long thinking about what to write, I would talk myself out of any idea that I had. And it was only sort of recently that I've stopped doing that and stopped thinking too much about... I guess a balance, really, isn't it?
It is. You've
got to think about what you're going to do, but...
I think you've got to trust your own talent, though, haven't you?
Yeah, well, that's the problem, isn't it?
But you've also got to... I think you've got to have it... If you've got it in the back of your mind...
Yeah.
It's kind of enough, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And the more you practice, the more you write, the better you get at it, and you don't even have to think about it. It's like you know... You know what's working and what isn't.
Yeah, it's right. You know, you're talking about sort of character stuff. You've got to kind of know about your characters, but you don't want to put all that into your book, like you said, Tom, or whatever you're writing. You've got to know it so that it informs decisions, but that's the sort of balance to try and strike, isn't it? Of like how much do you keep in the background and how much do you let ooze onto the page? Because I've been reading a book about playwriting. Have you got sort of like read books on... how to write and, you know, how to sort of to do stuff.
Yeah.
Because I've got this book that it's about playwriting, structure, character, how and what to write by Stephen Jeffries. Mm. And it was given to me by my friend Andy, with whom I've been trying to write a play. And my first thought was that clearly Andy's taken a look at what I've written so far and gone...
I better buy him a book.
Yeah, you're going to need some help here. But it is quite helpful. It is all about sort of... just ideas. And a lot of it, I find with these things, a lot of it you read and go, well, I know that. But there's a difference, isn't there, between sort of knowing what to do and actually having it front of mind. Like, it's good to be reminded of the stuff that you should be doing.
Yeah, I think so. So have you finished the book?
No. No. Like everything that I've ever written, I come back not quite halfway through. But no, I'm still reading it. It's quite interesting. It's quite actually, speaking of which, the guy who wrote it didn't actually finish writing it. He died before he got there, so someone else had to write it for him.
To be fair, compared with some of our excuses, that is a pretty good excuse.
That is a pretty good excuse not to write a book, isn't it? But no, it's good. It's helpful because it sort of references a lot of real actual plays and things that you could, if you wanted to, if you were so inclined, look at and see what he's talking about.
See, I get that for talking about like the structures of things and what have you. But when it comes down to the craft side of things, I don't like it.
Why not, Tom?
I think there's an element of you've either got it or you haven't. And you make it better by practicing.
So do you think...
It's like if someone can come and talk to you about being a world-class footballer, but unless you've got the talent and you put the training in,
so do you not think that anybody could ever be a writer? Do you think there's just some people who just couldn't ever?
No.
Who'd just stop?
I think some people will be bad writers. It's unfortunate. It's one of those things that everyone thinks they can do because most people can write.
Yeah.
And it happens with anything. Like with our jobs being voiceovers. You have it before where people go, well, it's just reading stuff, so anyone can do that. And it's not quite true.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose so. Everyone can do it. As in, everyone can sing. Like, you know, everyone can open their mouth and make a noise come out, but that doesn't mean that...
And then you see a lot of them on The X Factor thinking they should be the next Adele.
You could be right, Tom. Because I saw a lot of people on the workshops that I went on who were clearly... Not saying this in an arrogant way, but because I've never done anything, but there were a lot of people who were clearly never going to make it as a writer. They're clearly awful. And bless them, we're trying to learn how to be better, but it wasn't making any difference.
Yeah. Well, no, it might get them from being quite rubbish to not so quite rubbish. That's what I mean. I think there's a point where you have to just say, well, yeah, actually, having good ideas and being able to write them and having a natural talent for writing and then practicing that kind of trumps any books that you're going to read about it, any little self-help books. Although that is a great way to make money, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of these things do kind of prey on, obviously not the BBC stuff that I guess was free, I assume, but there's an element of, and we see it in our industry, don't we, the voiceover stuff,
It's a massive industry, isn't it? Yeah. There's more money to be made in teaching people how to be voiceovers than there is in actually voiceovering at the moment. And it is exactly the same with writing. Like I signed up to lots of different newsletters and things, and there are so many courses you can go on, like how to write a sitcom. And these people that have made careers out of teaching people how to write a sitcom. And then you think, well, if you know how to write the perfect sitcom, why aren't you sat at home writing the perfect sitcom rather than trying to...
Yeah.
Rather than charging people to tell them your sort of hints and tips.
I don't know if you remember, years ago, Dave, we had training from a sitcom writer.
Yes, I arranged that.
Because I found the notes from it the other day when I was clearing out
the remember garage. It well, because I'd worked with this guy... I think it was from the comedy unit in Scotland where the Scottish sketch was from, and I remember one part of that training was that he gave us this sort of sketch. It was like the first draft of a sketch, and he said read that and sort of try and pick out the funny bits and see if you can make it into a better sketch. And I remember reading the sketch and it was dreadful. I didn't find any decent bits in it at all. And I think we said the same thing.
Well, I was loath to say anything like this now that you actually mentioned him by name.
but that's...
I'm going to agree with you, and then in the edit, I'll probably bleep his name out.
All right, because that's... Well, he did...
I'm going to change his name to something else.
Well,
I'm going to change his name to Charlton Longstaff.
Charlton Longstaff gave us this sketch to look at, but he didn't actually write it. But he was a script editor, I think, and...
Yeah.
He'd taken that sketch, he'd seen something in it, and that sketch went on to be the basis for the long-running sitcom Still Game.
It was probably the first half of a very funny sketch, Dave. Probably the first 40 seconds. And we're like, well, why is there no punchline in it?
This is the way, this is the Scottish way.
Oh, just we don't have punchlines in our sketches, we just get rid of the punchlines. No time for them.
Yeah, I don't know if these things are uplifting and inspirational or depressing when you see.
I think that's the thing I find them quite depressing.
Yeah. Like you can work and work and work on something and think it's really good, and then something that you just it's just dreadful comes along, and that somehow ends up But is it because it's got the right?
I mean, there is the possibility that we're completely wrong in our judgment of stuff. But I mean,
I doubt it. Yeah, I think sometimes it's the right people are behind it at the right time, or it's framed in
and
the right
about
way.
About taking risks or not taking risks and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you hear that a lot, don't you? When you know, if you watch a documentary about how The Office got on air or whatever it is.
Yeah.
There's someone somewhere that's gone, do you know what? Sod it.
Yeah.
We'll take a punt on this one.
It's having somebody who can see that seed in it. Because I think it's really easy, isn't it, when you're writing something to be absolutely obsessed about making sure every detail is perfect. But when it comes to the process of actually, you know, the real world of commissioning stuff, they're often looking for like a seed that goes, oh yeah, there's something in that which is really good. Like all these other 50,000 words don't matter, but one, the way that he's written Chagrin there is so good. We're going to make something out of this.
Yeah, but then I think if you're talking of sitcoms, if you go back 15, 20 years, the first series of a sitcom wasn't always particularly that good.
No. Well,
and then it would grow from there as the characters developed.
Yeah.
Whereas I think very much now it's kind of a lot of them are kind of, you got to hit the ground running.
Yeah, yeah.
You got one shot.
Yeah.
If you don't get it right, you're not getting a second series.
Well, I think that's...
Give me a second series, you shit.
Well, that's like Only Fools and the Horses, I think, is an example of that, where it wasn't particularly good for the first couple of seasons.
No, and I don't know if you ever watched Parks and Recreation.
I've seen the first series of it, and I'm wondering...
It's terrible. The first series is terrible.
Yeah,
then.
I'm wondering what all
but
the fuss is about.
You need to watch the first series in order to understand and appreciate the second and third and fourth series.
Okay,
or whatever.
Maybe I should move on and then it to gets the second brilliant. Series.
Yeah.
Thanks for that, because I've been wondering what the fuss was about with that, because the first one's just not very good, is it?
And it's funny, actually. Parks and Recreation is a great one to watch, first to second series, just to see how much they just went, fuck it, we'll just change that character. We'll
keep really?
We'll keep that character... But we'll just kind of pivot their personality to there. That's better.
Okay.
But there are just two or three of the characters just have like a proper like...
Personality transplant. I see.
Backstory kind of...
Yeah.
Just, yeah. You just tweak that.
But a lot of that is about having sort of backing and money somewhere down the line that says, no, we're going to stick with this. Because
Someone's got to take that risk.
Yeah.
Got to take that risk. It's all about, how things develop, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which reminds me, when we went on that training course, Dave, that was the fateful one when DAB digital radio was just coming in. And do you remember, they gave us that fantastic talk about how it was the future.
Yes.
And how the signals received would be so much better than FM.
Yeah.
Not really.
No.
And then one day, once this all takes off, you'll have a radio. You'll be listening to the radio and you won't be able to get on it. What? What were you able to get? Pictures. They'll have pictures along with the sound. I remember me and Dave just looking at each other, just going, "What?
Invented television again.
Television, isn't it? That.
Yeah.
But the pictures probably wouldn't be moving. So it's like a poor, it's like a really poor television. Cool. Yeah, future of radio, we're in.
Yeah, we had some wonderful sort of meetings. Radio-wise, look, the training sessions we went on, I remember this one with a guy, it was supposed to be like an inspirational sales guy, but it had come out of, he'd had like a breakdown or something, and he was using this breakdown as his sort of personal affirmation. So he basically came out and just started going on about how wonderful his life was now. I'm sure he started by saying... nice to meet you all. I got to tell you, I was at the Rugby World Cup in South Africa last year, in this 5-star hotel, a penthouse suite, glass windows overlooking Tabletop Mountain, having sex with my beautiful, gorgeous model wife out of a window. Just thought I'd tell you that. And then he went on into the presentation.
Again, that's where I'd struggle with the erotica, you see. Because that's obviously normal, but I can't remember the last time I had sex with my wife out of a window.
No, overlooking Tabletop Mountain.
No.
And then wrote some like little cards to affirm yourself that says, I am good, I am worthy.
Is this guy the inspiration for your book, Tommy?
For legal reasons, I'm unable to answer that at this stage.
Fair enough. Well, lawyers can get in the way, can't they?
But, yeah, I have put a bit in the front of the book with the usual any resemblance to persons living or dead is purely coincidental.
But not that coincidental.
Apart from the ones that were arseholes where I've kept the real names, the arseholes. Yeah. No, I think I took my pathetic little sales book, pastiche book. I drew on a lot of, I've had a lot of different training from a lot of different people over the years. And so it's not really based on any one person at all. It's just
amalgamated.
It's a mishmash and very much a comment on the culture of sales rather than any individual. I think that covers it, does it?
Perfect. Well done, mate. Well,
that'd be fine, wouldn't it?
Because it's interesting, because you were talking about that book, Tom, and you said that you were sort of worried about, you know, whether things, about things sort of dating or not necessarily being relevant because it's sort of taken a long time. And I've been thinking the same thing because the play that I was writing with my friend was about a pub quiz, and then sort of COVID's happened, and I've just got this feeling that everyone must be sick to death of quizzes now. That, like, a pub quiz is just something that no one's going to give a shit about anymore.
You know what you should do, Dave? Change the play so it happens on Zoom.
Yeah,
the Zoom
whole
pub quiz.
Play. Oh, that'll be, because everyone will love that, won't they? But it's just a, I don't know, that's a sort of common thing where you sort of worry about stuff that you write becoming outdated or obsolete if you take too long about it. It's just not gonna make sense anymore. Like, because it's something that I really like what we've done so far, and I want to do a bit more on it. But I'm worried now if anyone's gonna,
I think,
care, or if anyone's gonna,
I think
people
we've
will be so
go
keen to get
we've
back
talked
into
about
theaters.
Before, David, it doesn't matter.
Just
it
get
doesn't
it done.
Matter, does it?
Also,
no.
People are desperate to get back to the pub.
No one's
or really think about the pub in any
shape
or form.
That's true.
Just call the play a return to the pub quiz, and everyone will be over it like a rash. Love
turn it. To pub quiz. Well, see, the cool thing about it, the great thing about the idea is that whilst watching the play...
Listen to Dave saying how great his idea is.
Must be good.
Go on, Dave, what is so great about
whilst watching
idea?
The play, you can actually do the quiz. So if you don't like the play, there's
really?
A pub quiz to do whilst you're watching
that
it.
That is a good idea.
So you get given a bit of paper as you go in and a pencil.
The idea is, instead of it being like you're going to the theatre to watch a play, you're going to the pub to do a quiz, and you get your quiz sheet and your pen and all that, and then whilst you're there, this story unfolds on one of the other tables. You know, one of the other teams has this sort of domestic thing going on, and you overhear
that's
it
very
all
good,
during
yeah,
the
quiz. Like you should finish that.
Yeah, should do. Well, we've done like a draft of it, but it's then sat on a shelf for like a year and a half, but... should go back to that, really.
Yeah, definitely.
Now I've read the playwriting book.
Well, some of it, anyway.
Get back in there. But are you guys theatre goers? Have you ever thought of writing a play rather than a book or anything like that?
I love the theatre.
I thought you were a sort of theatre.
I've written a couple of short plays when I was at uni.
Yeah. I thought you were the time, John.
I'm talking short, like half hour little thing.
Yeah.
But I've never thought about writing it, an entire play.
I quite like the idea of a play. I like the restrictions.
Yeah.
I guess back to what we were talking to before about having a brief and having a, kind of a framework that you have to start from.
Mm. Yeah.
But kind of the idea, right, you've probably got like four players at most, really. And everything's got to be done on this one place, but try not to make it boring. I quite like that as a premise.
That's how we started, was thinking about... Because we just thought, we'd have to somehow put it on ourselves, which means we'd have to have a very simple, stage and a very limited cast. Mm. That was the sort of starting point, and then it sort of went from there. But because I'm not a big big theatre person, but I think it's quite a good exercise to sort of write a play.
I think I quite like even just writing.
Definitely.
Like a radio play or whatever it is. There's something very freeing about just doing all the work through dialogue.
Yeah.
Isn't it? You know, 90% of the work is done just by people talking, by it bouncing off, by being...
Yeah, yeah. That's when your characters have to be absolutely, nailed on, isn't it? Because if they're not interesting people and the whole thing is just people talking...
Yeah, and if they're not doing what they should do, unless there's a really good reason not to, it kind of falls... Yeah.
Not a single car chase.
No
or explosion.
Well, there can be, can't there? Just you can't see it. That's the thing about the players. You can. It's kind of a bit like writing radio ads.
Yeah.
The theatre of the mind.
Yes. Just imply that it happened.
Yeah. Looking out the window.
Katie and I had For many years, we've talked about when we're 50. I don't know why.
Probably seemed a long way away at one point, didn't it?
Yeah.
I think that's probably what it was. When we're 50, we need to write a play, devise some kind of two-hander, and that will take it to Edinburgh.
Quick tip for you, John. If you're going to do that, don't do it when the Edinburgh Festival's on, because it gets really busy. You're better off do it another time. Yeah? You'll be able to, because otherwise you won't be able to get a hotel and stuff, or a lot of the theatres will be full. So, yeah, if you're going to...
That's a really good point.
Yeah. Or don't do it in Edinburgh, do it somewhere else.
But it is getting closer now. Like you were saying before, you know, it's a really long way away, so that's great. And we've got loads of time to... We could start having we'll start having ideas now. You know, now we're like 38 and now there's not that long to go. We still haven't had an idea for it. Not that we've been thinking about it, but yeah, might be time.
Yeah.
Somehow, through some superhuman perseverance, or maybe you've just left it on in the background by mistake, you're still listening to the Failing Writers Podcast.
We've discussed the fact that it's less and less likely that I'm going to become a professional footballer now. I think that ship has sailed. I'm probably past the age bracket to be England captain. I'm probably in the age bracket to be a professional darts player still.
Yeah,
but I'm not really in the being any good at darts bracket. So that sort of writes that one off. So it's just the writing that's left. But, you know, I'm getting on in that sense as well.
It doesn't matter how old you are.
Well, I do often wonder if I've sort of, you know, peaked a long time ago.
No.
The sort of awards that I've got, the best award I ever won was the Silver Award for copywriting at the 2004 New York Festival's International Advertising Award.
Dave, that's an amazing award to
win.
Well,
it would be all right.
It
would be
pretty much. That's amazing. Yeah. Wow.
Well, what's the worst thing about it, Tom?
That's really good.
The worst thing about it is that Tom won the bloody gold. And
I've forgotten about that. Yeah, I got the one better, didn't I? I got the gold one. Yeah.
Well, I was thinking about that the other day because I found this picture, and because I also got the UN award, and the you didn't really get many photos at the ceremony. So, do you remember, Tom? We went out onto the streets of New York with our awards and took these pictures. Yeah. And it was freezing cold.
It was.
It was like minus 20 odd. So, and we saw the weather report, and it said if you go outside today and any of your skin is uncovered, after 5 minutes you will get frostbite.
Initially, we were like, whatever, because it was all in Fahrenheit, and we didn't really understand. Yeah. But then they had a guy who had that thing where they throw a cup of water up in the air and it comes down as snow, and both of me and Dave were like, right, going to put a scarf on, actually.
Well, I don't own hats. I've got like a really big head, so I don't wear hats. I thought I'd be fine. And then after 2 minutes outside, I'm like, Tom, I'm my face is frozen. I'm going to buy a hat. I can't speak.
So I don't think it helped, Dave, that we went up the Empire State Building at 9 o'clock in the morning.
No. Well,
and we got up the top and literally managed about 20 seconds outside before, like, I can't blink.
Well,
my eyes are frozen.
I'm sure it was you said that somebody you knew had said, if you go to the Empire State Building, you've got to be there when it opens, because otherwise the queues will be massive. You'll never get in. So we were there before it opened. There was nobody there. We were the first people, in the whole of New York.
Which shows that I was right.
So we went up, like, 80 floors up, and then you go up the last few floors on the stairs, don't you? And there's a gift shop. And then we went outside, and we literally walked out through the door, walked around, walked back in the next door, and went back
down again.
Just
kind of made some noises, like,
got somewhere warm.
But I bought this New York Fire Department hat, because it was so bloody cold. So then we went out the day after the awards, and we took the pictures with the awards, and there's that one with me holding the UN award. And then, Tom, I think you just started experimenting with Photoshop around that time. So Tom had done this picture and he'd Photoshopped Kofi Annan handing me the UN award.
It was intentionally ropey Photoshop. Yeah. It was like for the comedy effect.
And then you'd put the UN building behind us.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we sent that to our boss, Neil.
Sent it to the National Creative Director.
That's it. And he came back saying...
This is amazing.
We've got to get some PR out of this. We need to do a press release. This is like...
Whoa.
No, whoa. It's not real. I like Kofi Annan's there in his best suit and tie, and I'm there in my coat and a scarf from the New York Fire Department hat on. Oh, God. That's not real. And then there was to prove it wasn't real, I sent him the other one you did, which was me on a beach being handed the award by Britney Spears in a bikini.
I just love the idea that it was real and you and Kofi Annan were stood there and you're in all your winter clothes and you're going, blah, it's cold, isn't it? And Kofi Annan's like, well, you get used to it after a bit. It's not that bad when you've lived here a few years.
Well, that could have been the peak.
Yeah, that was an interesting trip though, Dave.
It was.
How long were you there for?
We were only there for like three days. Yeah.
But we accidentally got very drunk when we first got there.
Yes, then in got that quite brewery. A lot of jet lag.
And then at the awards do, we ended up sat on a table with this couple, this younger looking lady and
not that young looking.
parts of her face were younger looking, weren't they?
Yeah, some bits of her were quite new. But they came over because, I don't know if you remember this, Tom, the reason they came and sat next to us is because they thought, and this maybe gives away the age of the lady in question, but she thought that I was a young Matt Damon. I was really disappointed to discover that I wasn't, that Matt Damon wasn't at the advertising awards.
That year.
Yeah, so. that's why they sat next to us.
Yeah, but it turns out, so she was in Airplane 2, the film.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And a few other B movies. And anyway, so we got talking and what have you. And then she introduced us to Larry, her partner, husband.
Partner, I think.
And Larry's all like, it's not about me tonight, doll. Don't talk. It's about you. It's your night tonight. Because she was up for an award. He was just accompanying her. She's like, oh, Larry's quite big in Hollywood. I'm like, all right, cool. It's quite exciting, isn't it? Thinking.
Yeah.
And shame he's dead. We could have got him on the podcast. He was a writer, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. Yeah. A successful one.
Yeah. So he'd done loads of films. And we're like, oh, wow, cool. And she's like, yeah, have you heard of such and such a film? And me and Dave were like, no, not heard of that one. And then I remember she said something about a film called Q or something that involved a dragon flying around the Chrysler building. Oh, no. So we get about four or five films in and me and Dave are getting a bit uncomfortable with it, like kind of just drop it, lady. We don't. It's brilliant and everything. And the trouble is, the next film she said was Phone Booth, which both me and Dave responded to by going, oh, right, yeah. As in, oh, wow, you've said one we know. Oh, that was a bit of a shit film, really,
it was
wasn't
awful.
It?
But he was great because he kept saying, no. He said, no, tonight I'm not here as Larry Cohen, world famous director, screenwriter, and author of Phone Booth, one of the original people behind The Prisoner. I'm not here as Larry Cohen, who came up with the original concept for the Stephen King It adaptation. I'm just here, Larry Cohen, as Lorraine Landon's partner. It's all about her tonight. And he must have gone on about all the things that he wasn't there for about 10 minutes. But do you remember what she... Because she was up for... She wasn't a copywriter. She'd written an ad.
Some charity about, thing, wasn't it?
It was a public service ad to stop children going onto train tracks. But she'd written it as a rap.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And he was going, oh, it's so good. She is like the Snoop Dogg of the public service advertising world. But it was brilliant because I think a lot of people don't know about the sort of advertising it was, how long and boring they are because there are so many categories.
Mm. And it's just a cash machine, isn't it? The idea of it is to make money off people. It's to make money
because there's 100 categories and then split that into radio, TV, online, whatever.
And the trouble is when you win the top category of the entire thing, you have to wait right to the very end. I mean, we were there till the end, weren't we?
We were there all night, weren't we?
Victims of our own success, Dave.
Yeah. But they sort of said, didn't they? Like, right, so what we do is we announce the category, we announce the nominations, we say the winner. If it's you, you walk up this side of the stage, shake hands with the person in the middle, walk straight down the other side of the stage, and then you go out the back into this warehouse where you'll actually get your award and have a photograph taken.
Which then you can purchase later on.
Yeah. Mm. Apart from Lorraine Landon. Lorraine Landon was the only one who had her photograph taken on the stage, which made me wonder if Larry hadn't had something to do.
You're suggesting with, he just paid for the whole thing.
Oh, I'm not saying that, but it was suspicious, wasn't it? that the only person who got up and won and had their photo taken on stage was there with a successful
Hollywood director. Are you suggesting
Hollywood
that Larry Cohen,
director?
God rest his soul, the famous Hollywood producer and writer,
yep,
had forced children in Los Angeles to get run over on the railway lines in order that a public service messaging needed making for it, that then Lorraine Landon could write a rap to?
Stranger things have happened.
Wow.
Tom,
wow.
So.
What a murky world it is, the world of advertising.
It is.
Is she the lady on that Instagram thing that you sent the other day?
Yes. She's still a Lorraine Landon. She's still on Instagram, yeah. Bless her.
Looking at it, interestingly, I think on average, she's still the same age as when we met her 15 years ago.
That's LA for you.
You take an average of all the parts, she's the same age. Because she's had plastic surgery. Just to explain it.
Well, I can still remember the look in her clearly cataract eyes when I said that I wasn't Matt Damon. Yeah, bless her.
You should have just said yeah.
You should have done, Dave, really. You ruined the whole thing.
And your Bristol accent as well.
Yeah, but then I'd have had to... I'm Matt Damon, and...
that's right.
My backstory, for the reason why I'm here...
I'm in character for my next film.
Yeah.
Larry might have given you a gig. You could have been in the film.
That's
in
true.
The movies, Dave. You could have been in the sequel to the sequel of Phone Booth. Dave Bird is in the post box.
The Phone Booth was brilliant, though, because it was sort of... Because he said on the night, I've had this idea for ages and it's
I was just going to say this. You know when we're saying about things that go out of date? Ideas that no longer work.
It came out just as everyone was getting a mobile phone.
Yeah.
He released a film about being stuck in a phone booth.
You'll notice in the film, they neatly get round that by making a big point at the start going, oh no, my mobile phone has run out of batteries. Anyway, let's continue with the story.
To be fair, that did happen a lot.
You probably didn't notice it because it's very subtle.
Bless him. But I sometimes think that was where it peaked. It was just all been downhill since January 2005.
Is that partly because we haven't written that much? That probably doesn't help, does it?
Possibly, yeah. Maybe it's just looking at that silver award every day and realising that Tom's got the gold somewhere in his house.
Just in the garage. You have it if you want.
Got anything else to talk about?
No, that's the end of the podcast.
That's pretty final.
Should we recap that what our tasks for next time are?
So the task for next week is to write a couple of paragraphs of poor erotic fiction. And
right.
Note the word fiction is very important in that, okay?
Okay. Sold.
Are there any writers that like did one really great book and have never managed to get another one on the show?
Jesus.
Jesus.
Hello.
Hello.
Where's everybody gone?